Hello and welcome to Talent Takes Time, a conversation with inspirational women in the sports TV industry about how they achieve their success, the path they chose, the decisions they made, and their valuable advice. Today's guest is Natalie Perks, the BBC sports correspondent. Natalie is a familiar face on the national news and travels the world interviewing sports stars from all disciplines. She's covered 3 World Cups and 2 Olympic Games, but you don't just land a job like that. It's taken years and years of hard graft and practice, and it's not all glitz and glamour. We pick up the conversation where she spoke to me about one of her earliest jobs on Setanta Sports News, where every broadcast journalist was expected to do everything, even operating their own camera.
So day one at Setanta, literally the day we went on air, Harry Redknapp, I don't even remember this, it was 2007, I think? Harry Redknapp got raided by the police overnight for alleged tax problems.
Yes.
And that was our day one, and he was holding a press conference in Portsmouth. So I had to leg it down to Portsmouth with my camera, set up all my camera, fling the cable through the window to the guy who was in the sat truck, because at that point we had sat trucks, but I'll come to that. And then I had to film him, you know, film the whole thing live, day one, shaky hands. And then no notes. Obviously, I had no idea really what I'd been listening, but couldn't have written anything down. Then I had to jump in front of camera and do a live. Literally, he walked out, I jumped round and started talking.
And that was it's crazy, isn't it? But then I often think to myself, when you've done those things, you just think to yourself, nothing could ever be harder than this. And then suddenly you find yourself with an actual cameraman and a sound person, and you're like, well, yes, this is easy.
I feel really blessed. I feel blessed all the time now that I have a cameraman and someone who knows how to shoot things. Because, you know, we were shooting everything ourselves and jumping in front, doing pieces to camera. Players would take it in turns to see how they could kick balls at me and see if they could hit me while I was doing my pieces to camera. You know, they thought it was incredibly funny. And, you know, the lovely ones. And that's how you get to know them more, I think, because they sort of get to know this sad sort of girl who's rocked up looking like she's got a world on her shoulders and a tripod and a camera.
And it's hard as well. I always think that because you're working so hard, because you're operating a camera, because it's raining because it's England, you haven't got a minute, have you, to like stick on a bit of lip gloss or whatever. And I often find it's the hardest working girls that will actually get attacked. Someone will be like, oh, will someone brush her hair? And I think... because she's doing everything on her own, but it's almost like you want a little name strap, Natalie Perks, one man band, doing everything herself.
I used to have to like shout at Arsene Wenger from the back of the room at the press conferences in Arsenal, you know, to shout at him some questions. And they always used to look at me like, what on earth is this? And this is quite commonplace now. We see this a lot in local TV, don't we, VJs?
Yeah.
But at the time it was like, what on earth? And I remember it really reached a peak when I went to Derby on the day Derby went down from the Premier League. And at that point, Setanta, ITN, had decided in their wisdom that not only were we going to be VJs, but we were also going to drive the sat trucks. So they gave us a sat truck and gave us one day sort of training on how to run this sat truck and how to find the satellite in the sky.
No.
And storm, a really big storm, and I remember the satellite couldn't find it. It kept going, and I had to climb up to the top of the sat van in a storm to try and manually adjust it to look into the satellite in the sky. And when I rang saying, I just can't find the satellite, they screamed down the phone at me because I've been pressing all these buttons and I'd obviously done it horribly wrong. And I thought, no, I draw the line. Because I can't be a presenter, a journalist, a reporter, a camerawoman, and a satellite driver. This is ridiculous. But in hindsight, you know, I worked incredibly hard. We worked incredibly long hours. But it gave me the belief that I could do my job and then move on to what I've eventually ended up doing.
I can't stress this point enough. I see so many journalists doing it all, and I know how hard it is. But trust me, if you've had it easy, the moment you have to start multitasking, you will struggle. The story resonates so strongly with me too, but it happened very differently in my own career. I was lucky that my first few football presenting jobs were pretty big budget, and so I had the cameraman, the lighting, and the sound, and I got really used to that luxury. My moment like this happened to me about a decade into my career. I was at a European Championships with ESPN in Paris, and although we had all the crew, ESPN wanted things to look raw and real, so they gave me a GoPro and a mobile phone and wanted me to film myself up close, forget about your hair, forget how you look, forget the setup shots, just whip out your camera and tell the story, interview the fans on your phone. I remember feeling utterly self-conscious about this, and people were literally laughing at me. I remember one guy outside the Stade de France saying, "She's actually filming on her phone." Right now, this seems pretty normal. Mobile journalism is huge, but at the time it was rare, but it taught me such an important lesson. With the importance of social media now, it's crucial to be able to self-shoot, to use all the social media platforms to get things out there live. So yes, it was embarrassing. No one else was doing it. But if you want to get somewhere you've never been, you've got to do something you've never done. And I will be forever thankful for that embarrassing experience.
You know, I was a terrible camera woman. I was terrible at it. But I know how to put a piece together, and I know what shots need to go together and what works, and about not breaking the line and all the things you learn because you're having to do it yourself. I edited everything myself. So then when I went into my next job, I could edit, and I was editing mostly, I'd say 90% of the packages that went out on ITV News, I was editing. I rarely had an editor. So that's a skill I don't use now at the BBC. I'm not saying I want to go back, but I am saying, you know, I often say to people that ask me, what should I learn? I often say, learn camera skills and learn editing skills, because they're so important. And if you can just add that string to your bow, it makes you even more employable.
Definitely. I think one of the things that we experience a lot in this job is rejection. And because we're these shiny, glossy presenters, a lot of people assume that we take rejection fine on the chin. And probably we do by now, because we've developed such thick skins. But certainly when we were starting out, I think any kind of rejection must have felt really tough. Have you got any stories of perhaps where rejection might have led to something better later down the line, or sort of how you overcome rejection, basically?
In my first job, my first ever job, I worked on a website, which then became a magazine. And it was like this big glossy magazine, and it was all going to be the next big thing. And then we managed two issues and it went under. And we all got made redundant on Christmas Eve. And it was pretty horrible. And after that, I spent about 6 months, and that doesn't sound like a long time, but it's 6 months of feeling that you would never get to where you were meant to get to. So I spent 6 months essentially temping. I was temping, really, freelancing and temping. And I remember working as a temp in magazines. So within the world I wanted to kind of be in, even though I wanted to be in broadcasting, but at least it was still within journalism, but not on the journalism side, more on the sort of secretarial side.
Yeah.
And just thinking, oh, this is never going to happen. And actually what happened for me was incredibly fortuitous. Was I actually won a BBC talent competition, which was to become a reporter, and I became a reporter for Grandstand. Do you remember Grandstand?
Yes.
So yeah, I won my job whilst I was in that horrible temping job that I hated. But that was I went through a lot of rounds to get to that eventual point, and ended up having to go to Manchester for the final. There were six of us, and we had to do lots of things. You had to do a pretend to do a live on the live rugby sevens match that had just happened. It was the Commonwealth Games in 2002 in Manchester, and I had to do a pre-prepared live that was on the swimming, and I won, and I got the news while I was at that job. So whilst everything felt horrible, like I would never get out of it, this amazing thing happened. Now I get that I was very lucky, but having said that, I had done a sports journalism degree, so I was building towards it. It wasn't something that just happened to me overnight. It had been 3 years of, you know, that was hard work, and then being made redundant and feeling like you were never going to work again. But yeah, that's probably the lowest.
I believe you need that rock bottom. With so many of the women I spoke to, their very best opportunity came to them only after something huge came to an end. It reminds me of one of my favourite quotes. I have many, by the way. This one is painted, though, onto my wall. Sometimes good things have to fall apart for better things to fall together. And it goes for so many things, for work, for relationships, even renovation on a house. The very best job I ever had at ESPN only came to me after a contract had terminated with another company that I thought at the time was my dream job. Nat, like me, is a mother of two. I bumped into her at the World Cup in Russia when England had just learnt they were going to the semi-final. We both knew what that meant. even more time away from our little ones. So standing there in the cobbled streets of Red Square, we hugged.
Yeah, it's really tough. And Russia was hard because I think, you know, the FA would be okay with us saying we probably didn't expect to have to be there for 5 weeks, right? So, you know, Rio Olympics was the hardest, actually, for me.
Was it?
Because my little one was 10 months old at that point.
Yeah.
So my eldest had been 7 months. No, she'd also been eight, 9 months old when London Olympics happened. But it was London. Yeah. I saw her every night. But this time, she was 10 months old and I was leaving her for the first time. And literally, I'd been with her every single day and then left for 3 weeks. And that was heartbreaking. I remember someone I work with saying to me, you just need to smile. And I could have punched them at that point because I thought, I feel heartbroken. I felt bereft. I felt like a part of me was missing and I couldn't tell her because it was FaceTime and she was 10 months old. So she could see my face, but I couldn't explain. Whereas Russia was a bit different because by then they're 3 and 7 and I'm able to FaceTime them every single night and say, look where mummy is. And they want to see my hotel and they want to see all the fun things I'm doing. And I guess
it's different challenges, isn't it? Because there's still things you miss, but they're not quite the same as that. I think there was a physical wrench, I would describe it as, exactly like you. An ache inside my body that I'd never experienced. And I just remember thinking, I don't think I can do this again. I'm actually welling up thinking about it. It's still so raw. And it was like 8 years ago. So it is a tough one. What would you say then is the biggest, the thing that surprised you the most about the mum career juggle?
I just think until you're in it, you don't appreciate how hard it is because it's not just the obvious thing. I always say it's like spinning plates. You're just spinning them, and then you run to the front and you spin them again and you just hope that they don't collapse on you. And that's how every day kind of feels. I'm really lucky that my husband's incredibly supportive, but we don't have immediate family around us. So booking babysitters or anyone to come and help is quite hard. We've got a great childminder, but then that all changes and that, you know, anything changes in that thing and all the plates start to fall down. So I think the hardest thing really is the guilt. It's like the mum guilt all the time.
Yeah.
In Russia, like I said, you know, you weren't expecting to be there for 5 weeks. So I'd already sort of said to the kids, I'll be home on this day, you know, I'll be back that day.
Damn you, England, for being so good.
They reach a semi-final and you're like, wow, this is amazing professionally. It was the best experience I've had with England and I've covered 3 World Cups. But it was, you know, it was really hard to be 5 weeks away from my kids. And what was really hard was, you know, our job is incredibly male-centric. There's a lot of men around. They're all, a lot of them are parents. So they actually do get it. But I would get a lot. Who's looking after your kids?
Yeah.
How do
they... Are you missing them?
How do you feel about being away from them? It's just the kind of guilt. And they probably didn't even mean it when they say it. But you can't help but take that on because I'm like, I always say, you know, who's looking after your kids? Oh, the other 50% of their DNA? That's who's looking after.
Yeah, exactly. I think the hardest part is, it's obviously one person's innocent question, but when you work in the environment we do, say a press room full of 50 men, you might have had that same question 50 times. And by the 50th time, you're just like, someone is looking after my child. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
Like, I wasn't missing him actually, but now I'm missing him dearly. It is tough. And obviously, and the funny thing is, actually, I had conversations with lots of men in Russia, and equally, there were so many men like incredibly torn and missing their kids and actually feel they can't talk about it because men don't talk about those things. So maybe that's like an episode for another day.
It's funny because I did end up doing a few episodes of this series with men, and I heard some heartbreaking stories, not just the simple stuff like missing their children's birthdays, but one journo actually had his wife's labour induced so that he could meet his baby before a football tournament. And another commentator who jetted off to South Africa for the World Cup and left his wife with a newborn, a toddler and a dog and deeply regretted every moment of it. Sadly, this job makes you very selfish. It's something I hated to hear, but sadly it is true. I don't like to see myself as selfish, but it really is a reality of the job.
I wanted to be a journalist since I was 15 years old. So from the age of 15, everything I did was geared towards becoming a journalist. So that was getting my work experience at a magazine, going back and working for them again, throughout the whole of my summer, giving up the summers where all my friends would be out playing and I was working at a magazine at the age of 16, basically learning all their tea rounds. So I knew exactly how they took their tea so that I would become incredibly important to them and they couldn't envisage life without me. And it's really, I get how difficult it is now for students who are sort of getting into the world of journalism. They're coming out of A-levels or uni and the opportunities might not be there. But, you know, I grafted. I got on the train every day. I didn't live in London. I don't have wealthy parents. My parents weren't paying me anything. I moved out as soon as I graduated to London and I had to just pay my own way and find a job. And it was hard. It's not... Yeah. Not easy.
You just said something there, sorry Nat, but I just wanted to pick up on it. I think it's so important and it's something that I've noticed a lot. When you said you learned how to make a really good cup of tea, and it sounds silly, but a lot of people think about what they want to do and that's their dream goal and they only think about that. And actually some of the runners I've seen who've actually gone on to be successful are not the runners that kept saying, I want to be a presenter. They were the runners that made the best tea and they were so good at their job. They then got the next opportunity and then they were really good at that job. And then they got the next opportunity. So I would always say, I don't know if you agree, but just focus on the job you've got and do a really good job of that job, right?
100%. My husband was a runner in an overnight place. He worked midnight till 8 every night. We never saw each other as when he was 21 years old. He's now the executive producer of Ant and Dec. And that's because he was a damn good runner. Then he knew he wanted to become a researcher. Then he knew he wanted to become a producer. And then he knew he wanted to become a series producer. And he just worked, but he was really good at the job he had.
This is one of my favourite parts of Nat's interview. I believe the most surefire route to success in anything is the very next step, putting one foot in front of the other. It's not always about reaching for the stars, dreaming big, but being really good at the job in hand, having a great work ethic, making a good impression, no matter what the job is, and being good at that job. I can't tell you how many people I've given that advice to and seen it pay off. People always want the job above them, but here's the craziest piece of advice. You get that job by being good at the job you already have. Opportunity is disguised as hard work. I have many, many examples of this. I see people land jobs because of the hard work that some weren't willing to put in. A quick example from my own career. When I was at Chelsea TV, not many reporters wanted to cover the reserves. It was usually a long drive to a boggy field with one man and a dog watching, but I did it. And I developed a very good relationship with the manager then. He gave me the team news early and explained his tactics, and years later, that same man would go on to become the manager of Liverpool Football Club. And so, those hard years of watching his style and his tactics and that relationship we forged paid off.
I always say to people, it is who you know, it's still just who you know. And when you do work experience, you'll meet people. So when I did my work experience, for example, at the Daily Mirror, when I was 21, Des Kelly was a sports editor and lovely John Cross and Darren Lewis were still working there as they are now. And you know, you meet these people and they are people that will help you in your career for life and will always have your back. And I always feel like the people I was around when I had, was it work experience, so the people that I feel really helped me in my career, whether they know it or not, they did. And I still feel that I'd be able to call any of them and say, look, I need a bit of help, can you help me? And I feel like they would, because they're good people. And all the people I met along the way, that whose numbers I kept, the players I met, you know, 10 years ago, who some of them have retired now, but I still feel like I could give them a call and they might help me on something or point me in the right direction. And that is journalism, isn't it? It's about your contact.
Yeah, contacts.
You know, and you can, and not being afraid to pick up the phone. And I often think some people are a bit scared to phone people, pick up the phone. Everything's done on text or emails.
Yeah.
I get that. But it's so much of meeting face to face and liking people, isn't it? And
yeah,
being chatty. And, you know, we're talkative people, aren't we, you and I? And I think that's a big part of it. I don't think you can be in broadcasting unless you're, you know, quite chatty and, you know, with people and take people's numbers.
But you have to push yourself out of your comfort zone. That's when you start.
I don't like doing that much, I have to say. If I go to a big event, like we often see each other at big events, I'm not great at like going around the tables and meeting people I don't know.
I think you can still be a presenter and actually bizarrely still be a little bit shy in certain circumstances. And I think a lot of people can't really sort of fathom that because of the job that you do.
Oh, I'm the same. And people always say, oh, what, you? And I'm always like, yeah, I'm not great at meeting new people, but you kind of have to in our jobs. And you just need to, you know, always remember that, you know, first impressions are important.
Work experience may sound lowly or beneath you, and I get it that it's not the best label out there. But as Nat reiterates, meeting people is everything in so many industries, not just ours. I'm pleased Nat ended on this point, because you may be interested in journalism, but you may also consider yourself shy. Being in a male-dominated industry can feel intimidating at times, but being out of your comfort zone can lead to growth. So many of my opportunities have come from being at social gatherings that perhaps I wasn't in the mood for. Put yourself out there. Opportunities don't happen when you're sitting on your sofa. My biggest takeaway from Nat's conversation is make a good cuppa, or one so bad that you're literally known for it. In other words, make an impression. That's it from me at the 3 T's. Talent takes time. See you next time. Talent Takes Time is presented by me, Alison Bender. The series producer is Gary Hayes, and Matt Alabaster has produced all our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our music. If you'd like to know more about my career in the media, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok at AliBenderTV. You can also sign up to my website, alisonbender.com, for more information on getting into the media industry. This has been a production for the Highway 61 Network.